This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning. I'm John Hoffman. Community Update this week consists of a series of updates on stories from the past week. Many schools saw scores drop with the new iLearn tests, but one local school got the highest English scores in the state. Mary Frank Elementary's third grade earned top honors, and the school overall ranked eighth in the state. PHM school leaders point to a few things.
Everyone I spoke to repeated the same thing. They're a data-driven district focused on finding gaps in learning and filling them. But even with the top third grade English scores in the state, there's no sense of complacency at Mary Frank. As the principal told me, lifelong learners, lifelong learning is their motto.
Three main areas of writing: informative writing, opinion writing, and narrative writing.
And all of the important words.
If you're like me and don't remember third grade English, it's no joke. Students not only have to read complex passages and understand them, they have to be able to differentiate between different styles of writing and what the goals are for that style. Is it trying to inform? Persuade? What's the point of view? Mary Frank's third grade class mastered these different elements. But how? Well, by using every tool at their disposal, for one, like a district-wide online assessment tool that mirrored what the iLearn looked like.
In using our tool, I do think it prepared our students. They weren't shocked when they saw iLearn, because it was a very similar format.
I know what I'm going to write on my page.
Mary Frank's principal is certainly proud of last year's third graders, but not just because the numbers say they succeeded. She stresses that the most important part is that high scores reflect how much they learned since the beginning of the year. The balance between preparing kids for the test and teaching real-world skills can be delicate. Of course, some of those real-world skills are useful for the test, including critical thinking, self-reliance, and stamina. For the iLearn, stamina was crucial.
They learn, you know, you got to get those answers written because we're going to show them. And then pretty soon they just like, okay, I need to do this. I need to get moving. And that builds in that stamina, the focusing in quicker.
Because the iLearn wasn't timed, Mary Frank's two third grade teachers taught their students to read, reread, and go back to the text for evidence. And the pair say they used frequent 3 to 5 question assessments throughout the year to get a snapshot of where the students were and how they were struggling. What if the students lost focus? Well, that's why their teachers gave them tools to stay on task.
We use the highlighter a lot when we're reading. Highlight keywords in the question and then highlight again when we're looking for the answer.
But inevitably, kids do get tired. That's when Oris and Listinsky use brain breaks. Get up and stretch, do 10 jumping jacks, just enough to get rid of the stress before getting back to work. Clearly, the strategies worked, but the school and district have bigger goals than just top scores in the state.
When we're preparing students for college and career success, we look at the basic skills for iLearn as the floor. And so the ceiling is much, much bigger than that.
Very interesting. And Tyler, you were telling us about the triangles of success. What is that?
Yeah, that's a term that pretty much everyone kept repeating. And essentially what that is, it's another way to refer to the way that parents, teachers, and students all work together to be successful. So if a student is struggling with something, you know, teachers can send them home with some additional work to do with parents. And if parents see something, they can give the teachers a heads up, things like that. It's just another way for them to all collaborate.
WSBT 22's Tolly Taylor reporting. The numbers are out, and South Bend Community School Corporation is not looking so good. The district lost nearly 700 students compared to last year. Local leaders say a struggling school system affects the whole city.
Jeff Ray with the South Bend Regional Chamber of Commerce says successful schools are one of the main things businesses and families look for when moving to a new town. Without a solid district, progress and development can start to flounder. South Bend Superintendent Todd Cummings says he's working hard to prevent that. Poor academics, transportation issues, bullying, and violence. These are just a few of the reasons South Bend Superintendent Todd Cummings has heard for why parents are pulling their kids out of his district. He's working on addressing them.
We've been nimble and agile to address the issues that we've been asked, and so we want more participation.
Cummings says he heard parents complain about lunches and hired a new food service company. He heard complaints about busing and made leadership changes in the transportation department. Cummings says he wants to hear more.
It's a big job. And what we've done is we've started communicating with talks with Todd. We have upcoming community forums around our strategic plan.
But Cummings can't fix the problems in South Bend schools without money. Jeff Ray, president and CEO of the South Bend Regional Chamber, talked to me a bit about how the district is considering a referendum for the May ballot.
In the meantime, South Bend's got to work on giving people the confidence that that money will be well spent and well invested.
Ray says if South Bend can't fix its problems, it could become a serious issue for the city. He says education is the backbone to a strong city.
It's the number one issue. So when folks are looking at communities, whether it's bringing their business here, whether it's moving here, the number one thing they're asking for.
Cummings says he hears those concerns and isn't giving up.
We want to hear what folks have to say, and we want to hear how folks would address the issue.
Cummings and the board will meet tonight for a work session to talk about the budget. The district will lose nearly $7,000 for each of those 700 students that have transferred out of the district. Cummings says South Bend has already cut nearly $13 million from the budget. He hopes members of the community will come to the work session to talk about how else the district can make up for some of those missing students.
WSBT 22's Caitlin Conan reports many neighboring districts, including PHM and John Glenn, saw enrollment increases this year. 12 candidates hoping to be the next president of the United States took the stage Tuesday in Ohio for the latest Democratic candidates debate. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg has raised the second most of any Democrat, $51 million so far. Buttigieg had a different, more combative demeanor Tuesday, getting into it with, among others, former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke over gun control issues. WSBT 22's Tali Taylor was there.
Leading up to tonight's debate, Buttigieg and O'Rourke had repeatedly criticized each other's gun control policies. And when O'Rourke was asked about his gun buyback proposal, Buttigieg pounced. O'Rourke has repeatedly supported gun control measures like red flag laws, universal background checks, and most famously, gun buyback programs. When O'Rourke avoided specifics on how his gun buyback program would work, Buttigieg said they can't debate until he has an actual plan. O'Rourke responded.
This is a country that loses 40,000 of our fellow Americans every year to gun violence. This is a crisis, and we've got to do something about it. Let's follow their inspiration and lead and not be limited by the polls and the consultants and the focus groups.
The problem isn't the polls. The problem is the policy. And I don't need lessons from you on courage. Political or personal. Everyone on this stage is determined to get something done.
Overall, it was definitely a very different Buttigieg tonight. He criticized Gabbard, Warren, and went after Beto O'Rourke. And another thing that was sort of interesting, there's the hashtag Mean Pete trending right now. Some people loving his performance tonight and some people hating it. Overall, it was definitely a new approach from the South Bend mayor.
Buttigieg also had sharp exchanges with other candidates over issues like health care and foreign troop deployments. Much of the national attention on the debate focused on the two leaders in most polls, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and former Vice President Joe Biden. The pressure on all candidates is ramping up as the first caucuses and primaries get closer. Those begin early in the new year. After 7 years of litigation and millions of tax dollars spent on legal fees, South Bend's Common Council may soon end its quest for the release of secretly recorded tapes that purportedly captured police officers making racist remarks and talking about illegal activities. The South Bend Tribune reports that council members in the past said they hoped the release of the tapes would shed light on Mayor Pete Buttigieg's 2012 demotion of former police chief Daryl Boykins. In a court filing, counsel attorney Robert Palmer referenced recent media reports about contents of the tapes, writing that they could affect the council's litigation strategy. The investigative reporting arm of the Young Turks, a politically progressive website that has advocated for Democratic presidential hopeful Senator Bernie Sanders, who's competing against Buttigieg for the nomination, recently published a story based on a former employee's written accounts of what she heard on the tapes. At least one other website published a story based on those accounts. The council is asking for an extension of time to respond to a motion for a final ruling in a case filed by police officers who have fought the tape's public release. The officers argued their phone conversations were illegally recorded by Boykins and by former Department Communications Director Karen DePape. The officers say the information is not new because the council could have obtained it when the case was in federal court from 2012 to 2017. The case has since moved to St. Joseph County Superior Court under the watch of Judge Stephen Hostetler. The police officers September 10th filed their motion for summary judgment, and TYT on September 16th published a story It said contained DePape's answers to questions city attorneys asked regarding what she heard on the tapes. Among other items, she recounted racial slurs she said officers made against Boykins, disparaging talk about other black officers, and discussion of fixing traffic tickets. This from the TYT report. DePape had previously alleged in court filings the recordings captured the officers making racial slurs on department phone lines without realizing they were being recorded. The website reported that it obtained DePape's answers to the questions from an unidentified source, posting screen grabs of parts of her answers. The police tapes case wound through local and federal courts for years. By this time last year, South Bend has spent close to $2 million on legal fees and settlements related to the tapes. More has been spent since then. Leaf pickup is set to begin on Monday, October 28th in unincorporated St. Joseph County. Two passes are planned through late November. WSBT 22's Caroline Torrey reports that people will not be able to drop off their leaves this year.
That's one of the biggest differences compared to last year. The leaf pickup company, St. Joseph Recycling, says it wasn't used enough in 2018. County leaders are expecting a smooth leaf pickup season.
Leaf pickup in St. Joseph County is less than 2 weeks away. Crews will start Monday, October 28th in Madison Township and make their way clockwise.
We're going to be beginning a little bit later, you know, in the last week of October. And if we are as lucky as last year, you know, we'll be able to pick up 100% of the leaves. But, you know, want to make it clear to folks that we might not be as lucky with the weather as we were last year.
Right now, there are still a lot of leaves on trees. Many haven't yet changed color. St. Joseph County Leaf Pickup Task Force member Mike Hammond says that's something the county is keeping in mind. He says the program could make some changes to adjust for leaves left on trees.
That said, and I think the public needs to know this, that if we have a normal winter, you know, some 30 to 40% of the leaves are still going to be on the ground after Thanksgiving.
Piles of leaves only must be within 5 feet of the road and be ready for collection by 6 a.m. on the first day your township's scheduled. Pickup company St. Joe County Recycling says all leaves must be easily accessible and at least 15 feet from mailboxes and obstacles to prevent property damage. A second pass is scheduled to start no earlier than November 4th.
We're not there to pick up 100% of the leaves. If it does happen that we pick up 100% of the leaves, well, that's great. You know, but if we have a normal winter, we're not able to get all the leaves. So I think the people need to understand that.
Areas that are not included in this pickup process are South Bend, Mishawaka, Roseland, North Liberty, Walkerton, Lakeville, New Carlisle, Osceola, and Indian Village.
Again, leaf pickup starts in Madison Township on Monday, October 28th. Vape shops in Michigan are once again allowed to put flavored products back on their shelves, at least for now. A judge temporarily stopped the state from enforcing its emergency ban on flavored vapes that's been in effect for a couple of weeks.
I actually visited multiple, and because it's such a touchy topic, none of the vape shop employees wanted to go on camera or they referred me to their corporate offices. But I spoke to three different stores, and two of them are back to selling flavored vapes. Another one is kind of waiting in limbo to see what the courts do next.
This vape shop in Niles says it's back to business as usual. When the flavored vape ban went into effect, the store just put all those products in the back. They say sales slowed down a little, but now they're back out on the shelves. Down the road at Vape and Smoke, a regional manager told me on the phone that he's refrained from restocking the products in his Michigan stores. He said he wants to check with his lawyers to see what the court's more permanent decision might be. And with the spotlight put on vaping recently, he wants to be extra careful that everything sold in his store is in compliance with what he calls so many different rules. Not only about selling, but even with product placement within the store. In the lawsuit, two vape shops sued the Michigan Department of Health and Governor Gretchen Whitmer, saying the emergency ban was unnecessary and will cause, quote, irreparable harm to their businesses. The judge wrote that there's no reason the health department needed to circumvent normal procedures and use emergency rules to enact the ban as quickly as it did.
Now, this ruling does not close the case. Governor Whitmer plans on appealing to the state Supreme Court to get a, quote, quick and final ruling on this. And in yesterday's ruling, the judge also said she couldn't draw a definitive conclusion on whether vaping is an overall harm to public health.
WSBT 22, Selena Guevara reporting.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader. 96.1 WSBT.